And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 in your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Nick Craig Show, hit that subscribe or follow button, and take a new program with you each and every weekday morning. You can also listen online by visiting the website, nickcraig.com. We've got a busy Thursday morning coming up for you here this morning. We start off with some news that came out pretty late last night as it related to Donald Trump's continued pressure on international foreign trading partners over tariffs and what he continues to claim are unfair trade practices that negatively affect the United States of America. So, what did we learn last night around 7 o'clock or so? Well, a U.S. Court of International Trade, or the U.S. Court of International Trade, I should say, blocked some of those reciprocal tariffs that were unilaterally imposed by President Donald Trump in the early parts of April. The ruling is seen as a potential major blow to Donald Trump's economic agenda and these ongoing efforts to not keep tariffs in long term. All right, I continue to bring this point up because I think it's relevant. I don't believe the idea, and I could be dead wrong about this. I'm not in the administration, but I believe when you're looking at these reciprocal tariffs and what's going on as it relates to various trading partners across the world, you're not looking at a situation where long-term tariffs are the solution. I don't think anybody is indicating that that is the case. However, what you are looking at is a situation where you want to bring various trading partners to the table, bring them in for negotiations. How do you go about doing that? Well, you put these tariffs on them. You squeeze them a little bit, give them a little bit of pain, a little bit of pressure, and that forces them to come to the negotiating table. Whether you like it or not, it is very much what Donald Trump lays out in his book, Art of the Deal, which, you know, came out, 30 years ago? I mean, this is not necessarily a new tactic or a new strategy from the president. He's been relatively consistent as it relates to negotiations, dealing with whether you're talking about business deals, trade deals, whatever, art of the deal from President Trump. In its ruling, a three-judge panel on the Court of International Trade said that the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, that's known as the IEEPA, which Trump invoked to impose the tariffs, do not authorize a president to levy universal duties on imports. Reading directly from the three-judge panel, quote, "The worldwide and retaliatory tariff orders exceed any authority granted to the president by IEEPA to regulate importation by the means of tariffs." They continued to say, "and separate and specific tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and China related to drug trafficking fail because they do not deal with the threats set forth in those orders." So you've got kind of two things going on here. One, you've got the seemingly unilateral tariffs under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, which the president has invoked as a way to put these tariffs in place. And then you've got some of the tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and China as it relates to fentanyl and the unbelievable, almost unimaginable amount of drugs and precursors to fentanyl that are flowing in through places like the U.S.-Mexico border. However, this court claims that because these trade tariffs do not just have an impact on drug trafficking, therefore it is not relevant to use it for that. Trump chose to go about this by declaring a national economic emergency under IEEPA, which did become law back in 1977, and then using that emergency as a justification for putting these tariffs in place and not going through the traditional process for tariffs, which does in fact require going through Congress. However, in this case, under the president and his team's belief, there's an emergency that's taking place. Therefore, they are authorized under this congressional act from the late 1970s to go forward with these unilateral tariffs. The panel not only ordered a permanent halt to the tariffs at issue in the case, but also barred any further modifications to them. So that's significant because what you would likely see is the administration try and walk some of this back to maybe sweeten the pot a little bit and make it not as big of a deal. However, this three-judge panel in the U.S. International Trade Court says, no, you can't do that at all. You cannot modify any of these tariffs. You've just got to get rid of them, this permanent halt. The Trump administration was given 10 days as of last night around 7 p.m. to make necessary changes to carry out the judge's orders. Now, it's important to note that immediately the Trump administration has appealed this decision to the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. So that's going to be an appeal that the administration is making in an attempt to get this decision by the U.S. Court of International Trade either struck down wholesale, to get some sort of temporary injunction placed against it so the order doesn't go into effect. And while the clock is ticking on this, he's got essentially 9 days. The administration has essentially 9 days to get this federal court of appeals to take this up, or these tariffs are going to stop whether Trump wants them or not. Several existing tariffs on specific products like aluminum and steel are not impacted by yesterday's ruling because the president did not invoke IEEPA powers to justify that they are necessary. White House spokesperson Kush Densey, in a statement on the ruling, said, quote, "Foreign countries' non-reciprocal treatment of the United States has fueled America's historic and persistent trade deficits. These deficits have created a national emergency that has decimated American communities, left our workers behind, and weakened our defense industrial base, facts that this court did not dispute. It is not for unelected judges to decide how to properly address a national emergency." And with that last line there from the White House spokesperson, it does bring up a very valid and interesting discussion that we have had now for months. And you know, many of you listening have kind of pondered for months. At what point are courts going too overboard as it relates to executive power played out and executed by the president of the United States? I mean, you look at so many of the executive orders that President Trump has brought forth in the last 130 days, however long he's been in office now, since later parts of January. How many of these orders have been blocked, stayed, temporarily blocked, permanently blocked by various judges? And the reality is a lot of them. Now, the simple reality of this is that as this goes through the legal system, the president, I strongly believe, and I don't really know about this one yet, I'm not immediately clear, but for many of the executive orders that have been blocked by some wacko leftist judge somewhere around the country, the president and his administration will likely be successful in court as it plays out. But as you're well aware, the unfortunate reality of the legal system, especially at this very high level, things happen incredibly slowly. I mean, the thing I like to say is the slow wheel, the slow cog of justice. And it's slow. I mean, years for some things to play out in court. Years. And the question as it relates this morning is the president doesn't have years to wait for these legal battles to play out. He is in office for a finite amount of time. Right? His term is up in 2028, and new leadership will come into the Oval Office, whether that be a Republican that will hopefully continue pushing many of the same agendas and policies, or a Democrat who will scrap all of it and go back to all of the crazy wacko nonsense that the left believes are such winning political issues for them. Right? So that's kind of the dichotomy that you're looking at with many of these executive orders. When you've got judges that unfortunately many have inserted themselves into a process in which they have no control over. I don't think that's the case here with the Court of International Trade. This seems to be a realistic response from a court as it relates to international trade. This is something that they deal with. I would argue it's in their jurisdiction. Now, Trump is going to appeal this. Apparently that process has already begun. And in all likelihood, this case ends up in the United States Supreme Court, with the Supreme Court ruling that whether or not the president has this authority as authorized by Congress back in 1977, right? That's going to be the question and issue at hand. The president knows, and everybody else knows, that he can't just put tariffs in place willy-nilly. He does not have the authority to do that. However, under this congressional authority from the 70s, if he believes that there's a national emergency, which it would appear obvious he does based on everything that he has said, all of the various discussions that he's had publicly during the campaign, now since being back in the Oval Office, that he in fact feels that it's a national emergency, that there is a significant threat to the U.S. economy. He is attempting to rectify that by bringing various countries and various trading partners to the negotiating table to find a better trade deal for the United States. It's a valiant effort. I still find myself kind of on the fence as it relates to tariffs. I understand what the president is saying. I get the arguments that he makes. On the other side, there's no argument that tariffs immediately have an impact on middle-class American consumers. It is nearly impossible, I would argue almost completely impossible, to micromanage a national trade economy. And I'm somebody that would consider myself a more of a free market capitalist. And there's no question about it. Putting tariffs in place is completely antithetical to free markets. I mean, it's the complete opposite. It's not a free market. Now, the president will claim, and I think has some justification when he claims it's not free trade anyway, because these companies are these countries, and many companies are taking advantage of the United States. Right. So that's the back and forth argument. I don't find myself sitting on the fence on many issues. This is one where I absolutely am, and I'm not ashamed or afraid or whatever to admit it. I'm going to be perfectly honest and perfectly blunt with you about it. I'm very much in the middle on this. I see and I understand both sides. And so I don't know that I have a strong opinion one way or the other. I'm not a fan of many of these tariffs going in place, but at the same time, I do understand the argument that the president and his team continue to make. One of the lead plaintiffs in the case, Oregon Attorney General Dan Raisfield, called the ruling a victory not just for Oregon, but for all working families, small businesses, and everyday Americans. The Oregon AG saying President Trump's sweeping tariffs were unlawful, reckless, and economically devastating. Now let me stop on this statement. We're talking about the AG from Oregon, which has some of the most expensive taxes in the United States of America. A state that has some of the most restrictive policies as it relates to business. Oregon, seated nicely up there on the left coast between Washington and California, as you get closer and closer to the coast, especially cities like Portland, is a progressive hellhole. That's a beautiful state from all accounts, albeit I'll admit I've never been there, but from everything I've seen about Oregon, seems like a very pretty state. But their policies in that state are a disaster, like many left-wing policies that you continue to see out of states like California, New York, Washington, Illinois, the list goes on and on and on. So for the Oregon Attorney General to talk about things being economically devastating and how this is a win for working families and small businesses is just complete and total nonsense. You can't tell me that your concern is working families and small businesses when your same political party is pushing the Green New Deal scam out of the federal government back just a couple of years ago. Pushed the Inflation Reduction Act, which ballooned government debt and did not cut down on inflation in any way at all. Right? You guys have to pick a lane on this stuff. You can't tell me as a Democrat, Oregon Attorney General is, you can't tell me as a Democrat that you are so freaking concerned about working families, small businesses, and everyday Americans while you continue to push policies that make it more expensive to live, more expensive to operate a small or large business, more expensive to buy a home, rent an apartment, find some sort of shelter or housing. You can't tell me you're concerned about that stuff. You're just not. If you were, you would divorce yourself from some of your ridiculously onerous policies like you've got in places like California, Oregon, Washington, Illinois, Michigan, New York. The list just goes on and on and on and on. So I'm sure that's what the Oregon Attorney General feels as it relates to this, because it's a good win against the man, right? Orange man bad is getting slapped down in court. So that's a win for him. But don't gaslight me. Don't blow smoke up my ass as a Democrat that you care about small businesses, everyday Americans, and working families. You're not going to be successful in that at all. Just not even close. It is the quintessential definition of gaslighting. Wednesday's ruling out last night responded to two separate lawsuits challenging Trump's tariff. One of the suits was filed by a group of state attorney generals, all Democrats, by the way, no surprise there. The other suit was filed by five American businesses that rely heavily on goods imported into the United States, which they claim are severely affected by tariffs. The three-judge panel said that in its ruling that Trump's tariffs orders were unlawful as to all, not just the plaintiffs, meaning that, you know, when you've got a case like this coming forward, the judges could have ruled that just for those five American businesses, the tariffs were unlawful. And those five businesses would have had some sort of legal carve out or some legal exemption around this. However, that is not what the judges said. They said it's unlawful to all businesses, not just the five that brought the suit. Trump on April the 2nd unveiled sweeping reciprocal tariffs on imports from nations around the world, ranging from 11 to 84%. Just a couple of days later, on April the 9th, he issued a 90-day pause in some of those tariffs, but kept in place the 10% baseline on most products entering the country. The panel in its ruling on Wednesday said that it did not see a clear connection between the purported emergency that Trump was using to justify the tariffs that responded to drug trafficking and what tariff can do in practice. Trump had argued that at the time, a 25% tariff on Mexico and Canada and a 10% levy on imports from China were urgently necessary because the countries had failed to arrest, seize, detain, or otherwise intercept drugs and drug traffickers, which is accurate. I mean, Mexico and China, to the lesser degree Canada, but those two countries in particular, they don't care if fentanyl is flowing into the United States. They don't care that those drugs or some of the precursors to those drugs are flowing across the border. They could care less. It's just more money in the pocket of the Chinese Communist Party, more money in the pocket of the Mexican government, which, of course, in many areas is almost exclusively run by street gangs and drug cartels. I mean, Mexico's almost a third world country for Christ's sake. I mean, it's insane. They have not been serious about this because they didn't have to. I mean, why didn't they take this stuff more seriously? Because you had a bumbling idiot in the Oval Office prior to January the 20th. I mean, you had a guy that was not serious about any of this stuff. You had a guy that seemingly didn't care about the incursion of fentanyl and other drugs into the United States, leading to an epidemic of overdoses that is unimaginable. He wasn't tough on Mexico on this stuff. He wasn't tough on China on any of this stuff. So they just continued to package the stuff up and fly it into the United States, whether that be illegally smuggled across the border, putting it in packages that were making their way to the United States under the limit of which they were checked by import agents. I mean, just they found plenty of ways around it, and seemingly the previous administration didn't care. However, the judges found that there was no clear link between the president's stated goal of cutting international drug trafficking and the method Trump was using to pursue it, charging import duties on legal trade. The panel said, quote, "Customers' collection of tariffs on lawful imports does not evidently relate to foreign government's efforts to arrest, seize, detain, or otherwise intercept bad actors within their respective jurisdictions." That's obviously a very legal statement there, but I don't necessarily agree with the court on that. You put some of these tariffs on countries like Mexico and like China, and in this case, even Canada, to force their hand to be more serious about this drug enforcement, you will absolutely get a change. Nope, none of these countries want to pay the tariffs into the United States. They don't want the reciprocal tariffs on U.S. goods into their countries either. at least at the levels that have been discussed as of late. They don't want that. It's not good for business for them. Trump is trying to once again bring them to the table and force them to negotiate. And we can have a full-throated argument and debate over whether that's going to work or not. But the idea that, well, there's no clear link between some of these tariffs and cutting international drug trafficking, I think that's a very flimsy legal argument or legal opinion that these justices are making. You want to claim that he doesn't have authority under the 1977 Congressional Act? That's one thing. But trying to claim that you can't find a direct link, which of course you're not going to be able to, between some of these tariffs and drugs flowing into the United States, I think is just very shaky at the best. So this is what I would argue is a big blow for the Trump administration. This is something that they are going to have to go back, kind of lick their wounds on this a little bit. If they want to continue with this stuff, push forward with the appeals process in the United States, a federal court of appeals, and figure out how to continue with some of this stuff. I mean, we've seen some of the commentary from various members of Congress with attempts to step in and put a pause on some of these tariffs. And one of the avenues here for the president is going to Congress, going to the House, going to the Senate, demanding some of these tariffs be authorized by Congress and browbeating them through that way. I don't think he'll necessarily be successful with that. The tariff discussion is something that I believe from a political standpoint is not incredibly popular. I mean, we looked at and I'll pull it up again here this morning. We looked at the newest Carolina Journal poll that was out last week, and it looked at things like tariffs. And when you look at the question that was asked in the Carolina Journal poll, here it is. How likely do you think it is that higher tariffs on imported goods will result in you paying more for the products you buy? You've got 75.5% of people saying likely, 56.2% saying very likely, 19.1% say somewhat, and less than 20% saying unlikely. I mean, so this is the most recent Carolina Journal poll out just a couple of weeks ago. 75% of people say, yeah, these higher tariffs are going to result in me paying more for products. Now, some folks are, in fact, willing to give this a certain amount of time to play out. Most individuals are willing to give it at least a little bit of time. But in the short term, they understand that, yes, this is going to have a pretty significant effect on this. And when you look at the polling on that, the question was, how long of a disruption to the U.S. economy would you be willing to accept in order for the U.S. to realize any economic benefit from higher tariffs? 40% of people say right off the bat, I don't believe that there will be any benefit from tariffs at all. Then you've got 16% of people that say they'd give it a year, and another 17% of people that say that they'd give it 2 to 3 years. So between 1 and 3 years there, you've got in the mid-30s as it relates to people that are willing to give it some time. So everybody, for the most part, 75% of people admit, yes, it's going to have an impact. You've got 40% that say, however, there's not going to be any gain for the United States, and about 35% that say, I'm willing to give it 1 to 3 years for some of this to play out. And then, another question on this as well. Which of the following statements come closer to your view on tariffs proposed by President Donald Trump? 48.5%, the overwhelming majority, say tariffs raise consumer prices and hurt businesses that rely on imported goods and raw materials. Then you've got 40% that say tariffs are necessary to protect American industries and reduce dependence on foreign countries. And I bring all of this up and show you some of that data this morning because the Trump administration now has essentially two avenues. Play this out in the legal system, which they will obviously do, but is likely to take a significant period of time. I can't imagine that the U.S. Court of Appeals is going to issue a temporary stay and block this in the next 9 days. These tariffs are likely going away. I guess 10 days from yesterday would put us at next Saturday, the 7th of June. Those tariffs are probably going to stop. I mean, if I had to bet dollars to donuts this morning, I would strongly say that those tariffs will not be in place at the end of the first full week of June, just based on the legal process and how this something like this is likely to unfold. That's just probably going to be the case. So with that probably being the uphill battle that the administration is going to see from a legal perspective and the, you know, play it through the court system and let the legal system do its thing, that only leaves one other venue and one other avenue, and it's going to Congress and getting something approved. But again, you look at some of these numbers on tariffs, and again, this is just one poll. This is one snapshot of one day, one period in time of what people think. I do not believe, especially many House and Senate members that are going to be up for re-election in the next couple of years, that they want to tie themselves to tariffs. I just don't think that it is such a politically popular idea that they are willing to essentially fall on the sword for this. I just don't think that that is likely or that that's going to happen. And that's just the reality of politics. I mean, you look at issues that are politically popular and issues that are politically unpopular. And I would argue that tariffs, even though some folks are willing to give it time, are something that are politically unpopular. Why? Because in the short term, 75% of people in this poll believe that it will have an impact on pricing. Nobody wants to spend more than they have to for goods and services. Right? We are all trying to figure out how we can spend essentially the least amount of money possible to get the highest quality of service or product possible. We do this day in and day out, all the time. And so with 75% of people saying we have an issue with this, or this is going to cause an increase in pricing, therefore it's something that's politically unpopular. I mean, that's just the reality of issues as it relates to elections and polling. The economy is always a top issue for American voters. And in this case, we saw what happened with the previous economy under Joe Biden. We saw how the previous administration's failure to deal with economic pressures caused the Democrats to get absolutely annihilated in the election last year. One of the largest drivers, I would argue probably the largest driver, was the economy. Right? It's the economy, stupid. You've heard that line ad nauseum for the last, 40 years, I guess, or probably 35 years since that was originally said. It's the economy, stupid. And so that's kind of the battle that Trump's playing out right now. I don't know which avenue he'll take. I don't think Congress is likely to take something like this up, especially those that have midterm elections next year, which, of course, if Trump goes that avenue, Senator Tillis will absolutely be against these tariffs. There's no argument about that at all, that he will not be in favor of pushing something like this forward. And so that's where we stand this morning. We're getting some comments in on our live chats over on YouTube and Rumble. Leslie is commenting over on YouTube and says, "We have been subsidizing other countries for years with them much higher than U.S. tariffs. It will level itself out over time with Trump's negotiation and deals." I agree with you. It will absolutely level out. The question this morning is not whether the president should or should not do these tariffs. The question that's being asked is it legal for him to do it through this this IEEPA, which was passed back in the 1970s. Some comments coming in on Rumble. Let's just keep everything going the way that it is then. Obviously, a crash is what people want. And I don't mean a stock market crash. I mean a societal crash. Let me be clear with this. I'm not advocating for the president to get rid of his tariffs. That's not what I'm saying at all. I am laying out for you what is in front of him right now. And what's in front of him right now is the slow wheels of the legal system or trying to go through Congress. Those are his two avenues. If you are somebody that is in favor of these continued tariffs, if you are somebody that feels strongly that these countries need to be squeezed and need to have some pressure put on them to come to the negotiating table to get a better deal for the United States, those are your two vehicles right now. You fight this out in court, which is going on right now. And then secondly, you've got taking it through Congress. Now, there's very real questions that continue to be asked about judges stopping every single executive order and every single action that the president takes. That is a serious problem. That has been well documented, not only on this show, but on dozens of other shows. And it does create a very serious question about what authority does the president of the United States have when any leftist, wacko, radical judge who is, you know, responsible for a small geographical area says, hey, you don't have the right to deport people. That's not necessarily the case with this. Again, we're talking about the U.S. Court of International Trade ruling on something. I would argue that they are, in fact, this is something that is under their subject matter expertise. Again, the U.S. Court of International Trade, we're talking about tariffs, we're talking about some of these restrictions. So I don't equate this decision to some radical leftist judge in Washington State blocking the Trump administration from deporting people. I think those are two separate things that are going on here. Both of them, unfortunately, have to play out in court. We'll continue to track those details. With this news, however, the U.S. stock market in the green this morning. Dow futures up about 200 points in pre-market trading. We are about we're about an hour and a half from the market open. S&P futures up 64 points this morning, and NASDAQ futures up just over 300 points as well. So with this, stock market is in the green. The uncertainty, which is what these tariffs create, whether you like it or not, is something that investors don't like. Again, is the stock market an indicator of the American public? I don't think so at all. Is the stock market the best barometer to be used as it relates to the status of the economy? No, I don't think so either. So, but just passing that along to you, at least the investor world seems to be pretty happy with this decision. We will likely hear more from the president today. This, again, came out about 7 o'clock last night. We did get that one statement from the White House, but I would imagine, just check my email here real quick and see if we've got details as to what the president's schedule is today. He is set to have lunch with the vice president at 12:30. There is a press briefing that is scheduled at 1 p.m. Today as well. And the president is going to be in the Oval Office around 5 p.m. So not sure if we'll hear from Trump about this today. We will definitely hear about it from Caroline Leavitt. She is set to have her briefing coming up at 1 o'clock this afternoon. So if there's any relevant clips or any relevant information, we'll, of course, pass it along to you coming up tomorrow morning. Well, I want to thank this morning the Law Group for their continued support of the show. It is not possible without their support and your support through places like Patreon.com. When legal challenges arise, trust the Law Group right here in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, if that's the case, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Great news, they're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you could visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or online their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. Appreciate the Law Group and their continued support here of the Nick Craig Show. On the other side this morning, a new report out from a group called Accuracy in Media, AIM. They have caught a member of the UNC Charlotte, that would be the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, talking about how they are bypassing DEI restrictions that were implemented by the UNC Board of Governors. We've got that video coming up, plus a call to action Monday for the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners meeting. All of that as we continue rolling on a Thursday morning live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, 24/7, wherever you get your podcast. Something I do want to pass along to you as we have gone through the county budget over the last couple of weeks. There is a very important meeting coming up Monday afternoon. I would encourage you to be there. This is a county commission meeting Monday, June the 2nd, 4 p.m. is when that is scheduled to take place at the New Hanover County Historic Courthouse. That's downtown 24 North 3rd Street in downtown Wilmington. There will be a public comment period on the county budget, which, as we talked about last week, is going to include a massive increase in your property tax bill. I'd encourage you to rally yourself, rally your friends, rally your neighbors. Get to that meeting 4 o'clock on Monday and make your voice heard on this. The county commissioners seem to be, at least some of the members, Bill Rivenbark, Rob Zappel, and Stephanie Walker seem to be hell-bent on increasing your taxes. Show up at that meeting and voice your displeasure with the county budget as proposed right now. 4 o'clock on Monday, that's June the 2nd, at the courthouse downtown. Sign up. Make sure you've got a couple little words prepared for that. Sign up to speak and make sure your voice is heard and tell the county commissioners you are not interested in paying potentially thousands of dollars more per year in your property taxes. I'll be at that meeting on Monday. I'll be speaking there, and we'll have a full analysis, full recap coming up for you next Tuesday morning. Caught a very interesting clip earlier today. It was actually published last night over on YouTube by a group called Accuracy in Media. This is a group that, similar to like Project Veritas and some of these other entities, goes undercover and exposes what is going on inside of organizations, inside of institutions. And unfortunately, the headline over there today is UNC administrator admits that she uses finesse, that's the word she uses, to evade diversity, equity, and inclusion bans. I'll remind you, back in May of 2024, the UNC Board of Governors, which is in control of the entire UNC system, all of the state UNC schools, banned diversity, equity, and inclusion. Now, here is the reality of it. And we knew this was going to happen, but it's interesting to see it in practicality. These leftist entitled people in the UNC system are never going to stop with DEI. I mean, unless you literally throw them in cuffs and throw them in jail, they are going to continue with diversity, equity, and inclusion. It is something that they morally believe is right, and it is something that they will push for to the death. Now, they've been called out on this, and most of these schools have had to get rid of their DEI departments. However, this undercover video shows exactly what many of you would likely have suspected is the case. They are getting rid of the name diversity, equity, and inclusion, but they are continuing to push the agenda in other forms. I think this video is very interesting to watch. Here it is in its entirety from Accuracy in Media, the headline, or the title of the video: caught on tape, UNC administrator admits that they ignore DEI ban.
If you're looking for outward DEI position, not to happen.
Some of your staff is still pushing DEI in defiance of the Board of Trustees ban.
But if you are interested in doing work that is covert, there are opportunities.
So we just met with Jennifer Troyer, the provost of the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, and we confronted her with the fact that their staff was caught on hidden camera bragging about pushing DEI in defiance of the Board of Regents ban. Hi, Ms. Troyer.
Yes.
I'm Adam Gillette with Accuracy in Media. How are you?
Good.
We received a report that some of your staff is still pushing DEI in defiance of the Board of Trustees ban.
I'm not talking to you. I don't know why you...
So this is Janique Sanders.
It sounds like you guys can't even do that here. It sounds
like... There's been a lot of changes.
So the individual in the video is Janique Sanders. She's an assistant director of leadership and community engagement at Charlotte.
Replace and repeal.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that.
Decision. Basically.
Okay.
So we had a former, I guess you would consider it a DEI policy.
Yeah.
It also established a CDO presence on this
campus.
I'm just going to give you a real spiel.
Yeah.
About the hide it.
Please.
I have a general feeling that you're fine. And that you won't go back and say, like, hey, she told me about all the stuff.
She said the word of the year is finesse. They're going to continue doing the work, but they're just going to finesse the language. Are you familiar with this?
Are there things happening?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Love. Okay. So it's equity work is still happening on campus. Don't worry.
So we've renamed. We've revised.
Okay.
Calibrated, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because language changes,
yeah.
Right?
Mm.
But the people who have to be in the presence of and in the space, don't they?
No.
So
Smart.
I think the guys that is like leadership. In order to lead diverse groups of people, you have to know about diverse groups of people. We don't have to call them diverse groups of people, but we can just say that everybody has different stocks of knowledge.
So in the state of North Carolina, the Board of Regents banned DEI from their universities. But here at UNC Charlotte, we found that they're merely finessing the language.
That's why I told my students this year. The word of the year is finesse.
Finesse.
Just finesse.
Okay.
So there are certain things that I can't say.
Yeah.
And I haven't said them this whole time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty good at learning how to be PC.
Do you think the Board of Regents would be bothered knowing the fact that even though that the university claims that they've gotten rid of DEI, your staff is openly flouting that they're still pushing DEI just under other names?
I'm also just really dedicated, I guess, is the word, to making sure that our students feel loved and supported. I could care less about whatever you want to call my office.
Come on.
All of that's going to change regardless.
Exactly.
If I was going to merge or shift or change,
something.
Maybe in 15 years, like, it was going to be something different anyway.
Language
just like,
always. It evolves.
Always.
We don't use the same language we used 5 years ago.
Exactly.
Yep. Always evolves, yep.
Even though some people still want to.
Oh.
But with that being said, one of the things that I always think about is how can we address those issues and those conversations, but in a people way that's PC.
Did you know about any of this happening? Do you have any comment or any thought on this at all? What do you say to the taxpayers who don't want DEI at their publicly funded universities?
Those are some of the things that are happening. If you're looking for like a outward DEI position,
not
to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. But
if you are interested in doing work that is covert, there are opportunities.
Okay.
So covert. So like,
what does that look like?
Like, think about this way. We're thinking of student success.
Okay. Yeah.
Student retention.
So just cool.
No comment for the taxpayers? Are you going to continue finessing things like Ms. Sanders?
In the last kind of one step.
Because why?
They can say, I feel
aggressed. I'm
so now, I'm a very analytical person.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's only possible that we have to find new ways to address
it. Oh, I'm just like, close.
There you go. It's at the opposite direction.
May I help you with something?
Sure.
Have you talked with University Communications?
No, we tried to find them. Will you take us to them? If you want to take action right now, click in the link below this video where you can send one message that goes directly to the email addresses of the Board of Regents of this university. They're the ones who said DEI shouldn't be pushed anymore, and they deserve to know that the law hasn't changed things.
So not really. I was texting earlier this morning with a friend of mine, and I said, this video is pretty interesting, but not necessarily surprising or shocking. And it's not, right? Because we know how leftists operate. They are demanded by the UNC Board of Governors to remove diversity, remove equity, remove inclusion policies and departments within their schools, and they refuse to do so. And so they, as you heard from the great lady in that video, that they're just going to find a way to finesse. That's how they're going to work around this. That's the word of the year. They're going to finesse the situation to continue to push diversity, equity, and inclusion, continue to push these policies, but under different names. And that we knew this was going to happen. I even think I referenced that this was going to happen as it related to some of these other things that have gone on. Because we know how important DEI is to the left. It is, I would argue, one of their huge policy agendas and policy points. I mean, it is their identity. I mean, I might make the argument this morning that the left's entire political agenda and identity revolves around DEI. They are not going to give up this fight easily, right? When the Board of Trustees says no more DEI, they're not going to fold their cards and say, we had a nice run with it, but we lost, on to the next thing. No, they are going to fight this tooth and nail. They are going to find ways to continue to operate in this manner through other agencies, through other departments, through other names. They will find a way to massage DEI into everything because it is their political identity. It is their political agenda. Now, we have gotten just some very early reaction on this. Again, this this post and video came out pretty late last night. Woody White, who is a former New Hanover County Commissioner and a former state senator, also a former member of the UNCW Board of Trustees, now sits on the UNC Board of Governors for the entire UNC system, the same board that, in fact, got rid of these DEI policies. Well, former County Commissioner Woody White posting this on his X account early this morning saying, "This is disappointing to see. I worked closely with other members of our board and the system office to repeal and replace the DEI policies system-wide in May of 2024. The UNC System Board of Governors directed each institution to implement the new policy, eliminate spending on DEI, and report compliance by September the 1st. We expected all institutions to fully comply, but suspected some would stealthily attempt to rearrange job descriptions and shift personnel, but not undertake what was intended, which was a full uprooting of discriminatory practices and diverse doctrines and a return to institutional neutrality." Woody White goes on to say, "I will be asking our system office to make a formal inquiry about the things said in this video and expect that UNC Charlotte will be forthcoming in a response." A very strongly worded post there from UNC Board of Governor UNC Board of Governor member Woody White. And as he's noted in his post, we suspected some of this would happen. And yes, unfortunately, that is what we have come to expect. We know that the left does not play by the rules. We know that when the left is told not to do something, they just continue to do it if they believe it's something that they believe strongly. And I would argue that DEI is probably the top of the list for Democrats right now. I would argue it is probably their top thing right now because so much is encompassed in diversity, equity, and inclusion. So much money is in DEI. I like pulling out this study on how much money is spent on DEI because it is a shocking amount of money when you look at all of the various private groups, all of the various contractors, all of these people that are spending money on diversity, equity, and inclusion. It is hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Hundreds of millions of dollars. So not only is it a very useful program for the left because they can continue to push their political identity, their political agenda, and their political policies, but a lot of money or a lot of people are getting filthy rich on DEI. There are so many entities and groups that are collecting millions of dollars a year from state governments, from local governments, from colleges, from Fortune 500 companies, from middle-sized businesses they have gone in there, demanded and forced DEI agendas and initiatives, and essentially blackmail these companies into hiring them to provide DEI training. Sensitivity training on this, video training on how to have a more diverse workforce and a more diverse this and a more diverse that. Everybody in the circle is getting rich on DEI. So you've got kind of a two-pronged approach here as to why the left is going to fight this tooth and nail. All of their friends are getting rich on this stuff, and it is a great avenue for them to continue to push their agenda. They are not going to give this up without a fight. And then the million-dollar question this morning is, what do we do about it? Right? That's the hard part. You can tell these schools to get rid of DEI. You can demand that they get rid of it like the UNC Board of Governors did back in May of last year. You can demand it. You can legislate it out. You can ban it. You can do all of this stuff. The question is, how do you enforce it? And that's the tough part of this whole thing. I mean, outside of these undercover videos, outside of these various groups going into schools like UNC Charlotte or UNC Wilmington or whatever other UNC school and finding somebody that is willing to essentially blow the whistle on this thing, not publicly, but say it in a private video recording. How do you have oversight on this? I mean, you can imagine that individuals in these positions, some of them are probably acting in a way that is probably pretty autonomous, right? They get the memo from their chancellor, from the directors that say, you've got to get rid of your DEI department. They say, okay, we've done so, we've done it. And they're probably just acting in, as was noted in the video, acting as covert agents, acting undercover, flying under the radar. Now, at the end of the day, the buck stops with the chancellor of a school system, no question about it. But there's a practicality of enforcing this stuff. And I really don't have a good answer for it. I wish I could sit here this morning and tell you that I've got the silver bullet as to how you actually root this stuff out. I don't know what the answer is. I think one of the solutions, which is probably not going to be very popular, is people that were formerly in those positions, don't reallocate them somewhere else. You have to fire them. And that's unfortunate. But you take individuals that were hired and put in positions to be diversity, equity, and inclusion officers or leaders of the diversity, equity, and inclusion program on this, that, or the other. The only way to get that out of your entity, the only way to get that out of your institution or your organization, unfortunately, is you have to get rid of those people. Because if you put them in a new department and you change the nameplate on the door and you change what their badge says, it doesn't stop their agenda. It doesn't stop their ability to continue to push these radical leftist ideological teachings throughout various schools and various institutions. It just doesn't. These individuals are hell-bent on pushing this stuff forward. They will do it secretly. They will do it in some sort of covert nature. And they'll just continue until they're eventually caught, like this woman was in the video that you just watched. They will continue to do it until there are serious consequences for what has gone on. And again, what do those serious consequences look like? You eventually you have to start getting rid of these people. I'm not ever an individual that is in favor of calling for people to lose their jobs. I've been through that somewhat recently. It is a life-changing thing. There's no argument about that. I'm not one of these cancel culture people that says, oh, start firing people left and right. No, that's not me at all. But in this case, I'm not sure what the other solution is. I mean, outside of bugging every single office and room within every UNC school so that you can listen in on every single conversation and make sure they're not talking about DEI, I don't know what else you can do. I'm going to be very, very curious to see how the Board of Governors responds to this. As I read the tweet there from Woody White, he's going to be asking the system to do a formal inquiry. I can't wait to see what that looks like and what UNC Charlotte's response is. In this case, I believe that the woman in the video, Jaqueline Sanders, probably needs to lose her job. And she is publicly admitting that she is defying orders from the UNC Board of Governors, that she is defying that order and attempting to continue to push a narrative and an agenda, but doing it in a secret way. She needs to lose her job. That's what has to happen. I don't have anything against her personally. I don't know her personally. But when you've got people that are willing to fly in the face of the directives that are coming down, directives from a governing body like the UNC Board of Governors, I think you start to tread into a territory where you have to seriously question whether these people are capable of doing their job without pushing that narrative. My strong opinion this morning is that somebody like this is not. They have made it clear that they will continue to push that agenda. They will continue to push that narrative. This is something that we will likely continue to watch unfold and see play out in the next couple of months and probably years as well. We'll see if the Board of Governors gets any response from UNC Charlotte, and we'll see what goes on there. You can read more on that story this morning over at aim.org, AIM, Accuracy in Media, AIM.org. We'll also have the links over on our Patreon, which is over at patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can get access to daily show notes and more, including our monthly hangout that's headed your way tonight. 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Zoom. If you are already a member of Patreon, just log into your account or check your email for that Zoom link. We'll jump on there at 7 o'clock tonight. Typically, normally over the last couple months, 2 hours at least, having various conversations about the news of the day. That'll be coming up tonight at 7 o'clock. If you are not already a member of the Patreon, you still have time to sign up, log into your account there, and you'll see the link as well. Look forward to chatting with everybody tonight over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, that's going to do it for a Thursday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. We'll be watching the trade and tariff discussion throughout the day today. We'll have the latest details coming up for you right here tomorrow on the Nick Craig Show. Have a great Thursday.